Welcome to Between the Rows, the weekly podcast brought to you by Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Laura Rance. This week, we'll be talking about how hard it is for rural Manitobans to stay connected in an increasingly virtual world. We'll learn how Saskatchewan pulse crop growers are facing an enemy they might not even know they have until it's too late. We'll also hear from an Alberta barrel racer about what rodeo athletes do to stay in the game, even when the game isn't on. And speaking of staying in the game, any bets on how high those canola prices will go? Stick around. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
I've been farming my whole life, and the one thing you can always count on is change. And now there's a new generation of inoculants from Lalemon Plant Care. New engineered granules in Lalfix Spherical for pulses and soybeans that provide improved handling and accurate metering. New Rhizobium and Lalfix Pro Yield that deliver improved nitrogen fixation and iron uptake in soybeans. I've seen a lot of change, but this Lalemon company, well, this changes everything. Contact your Lalemon sales representative today.
Welcome back to Between the Rows. I'm your host, Laura Rance. Manitoba Agriculture has just announced it will close ag rep offices in 21 communities across the province this spring. Provincial services for agricultural extension, crop insurance, and lending will be consolidated in 10 regional centers. The province says no jobs will be lost. Rather, this is about modernizing service delivery in recognition of the fact that business is increasingly carried out online rather than face-to-face. That may be so, but those of us living in rural areas know all too well the limitations of that assumption. I reached out to Cam Blight, president of the Association of Manitoba Municipalities, for his perspective on rural connectivity. And guess what? Poor internet service affected the sound quality of our recorded conversation. But here it is, anyway. Cam, the provincial government made an announcement this past week that indicated they would be closing offices in 21 rural communities and, you know, consolidating services. And I think a lot of people would like the idea of more efficiency in terms of government and delivery of services. But I wondered, given the fact that a lot of business has gone virtual and has gone online in the past year, especially with the pandemic, you know, there hasn't been a huge hue and cry over this. And I'm wondering if that's just because a lot of people are accustomed to doing more business, you know, on the internet.
I guess quite possibly. I think there is a huge cry, though, for better connectivity. I think there's a lot of members that are having a hard time accessing the services that are online and the tools that are available to them because they do not have good enough broadband connectivity at their disposal.
You were saying in your own situation, I mean, you live just outside of Portage La Prairie?
Correct, yeah.
And so what are the issues that you face in sort of getting access to the tools that people in an urban area might take for granted?
Yeah, like I live close to the junction of Highway 1 and 13, and there's a lot of dead spots for cell phone coverage, and also our high-speed internet is very limited. I'm fortunate to be on Bell MTS high-speed internet. I'm right at the end of the line. However, my speeds are very inconsistent and unreliable and very slow, quite frankly, to accommodate the needs that I have. I know other areas or other people in the area are going towards the satellite provided type services, but even that is very variable and is not consistent, and it's, you know, people are finding it very challenging when you have, you know, young students trying to learn from home, people working from home, just trying to stay connected, and it's a very big difficult challenge that we're trying to overcome.
So just to put this into perspective, what kind of download and upload speeds would you expect to get in your location?
5.
Oh, really?
Yeah. yes, it's that's at a good time. You know, unfortunately, as AMM president, I have to take part in a lot of Zoom meetings right now, and with my connectivity being where it is, there's a lot of frozen screens in my face, which is not the most flattering. You can delete that.
So,
you know, do you think that, you know, do you think that the system is up to the task that it's going to be asked to do then, if a lot more of this business goes online?
Quite frankly, no. And that is something that our members have been pushing for, and AMM has been lobbying hard for, is to see improvements in connectivity across our province. Our members understand the importance of ensuring that technology meets the new technologically savvy world that we see today. However, we need to ensure that we have the infrastructure in place to keep up with these digital changes. As Manitoba municipalities, we currently experience the second slowest internet speeds in Canada. So the digital divide between many Manitoba communities remains a major challenge, and it's only going to continue to grow unless we see some sort of investment in broadband connectivity across our province.
Now, just turning that around, the federal government has certainly indicated it's starting to consider investments in that area, and we do see some ongoing improvement over time. But, you know, if we get there, what kind of opportunities does this present for rural communities that have suffered from depopulation issues now for generations?
Well, I think to a certain extent, it's going to level the playing field somewhat. It'll provide everyone the same opportunities that those who are living in more urban centers are able to enjoy. Now, having said that, living in urban centers does not guarantee you that you're getting a good broadband connectivity either. So it is not just a rural issue. It is, both an urban and rural concern. But I think it'll close the technological gap and allow people to realize that they can live out in the country in the rural and still be able to work from home or have their children schooled from home, et cetera. And so I just think it would open up a few more doors and provide opportunity for people to maybe take care or to enjoy some rural living. And, of course, help them encourage more industrial development and growth in the rural. Agriculture alone is using up a lot of the technology, and it's really going that direction. I think this really helped the producers go a long way to being more productive and efficient if they can take advantage of some better connectivity.
I think one of the things that came out of the situation where there was so much of a lockdown on regular business and regular shopping, that a lot of business went online. And one of the comments that was made is that for a farmer who has the ability to market online, it actually levels the playing field there too, because they can reach the same consumer that Amazon can reach.
Oh, absolutely. I think it opens up a lot of doors and opportunities for those that have that connectivity abilities afforded to them. I can't really comment on that too much. I don't have that ability necessarily, but it certainly makes a difference. And, we just need to make sure to ensure that all Manitobans have that opportunity.
Thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
That was Cam Blight, president of the Association of Manitoba Municipalities, talking to us from his home near Portage-la-Prairie. The Canadian prairies have become a global leader in pulse crop production and exports. The increasing interest in plant-based protein suggests that demand for pulse crops will continue to soar. But will prairie farmers be able to rise to that challenge? Aphanomyces, a fungal disease that attacks the roots of pulse crops, is threatening to put a lid on production of this important crop in farmers' rotations. I spoke to the Western producer's Robin Booker to find out more. Hi, Robin. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Laura.
So we're talking about a disease that a lot of people would have a hard time pronouncing, but the way I pronounce it is aphanomyces. Is that how you pronounce it?
That is exactly how I pronounce it, Laura.
So what are we talking about here? What is aphanomyces?
Aphanomyces is a root disease, a root rot disease that affects pea and lentil crops in the prairies. And I guess it's not just the prairies. It affects pea and lentil growing regions all around the world.
So when did you first start to hear about this disease on the Canadian prairies?
I believe I first heard about it around 2015 during a presentation from one of the Sask Pulse representatives, but I believe it was first found here in Saskatchewan in 2012.
What piqued your interest about it when you started to hear the pulse industry talking about this disease?
What I found interesting is just how powerful this disease is. Because like if you get a major infestation on one of your fields, there's a good chance you will not be able to successfully grow pea or lentil for many years.
So I guess that's why it becomes a big threat to an industry that's become very important to us on the Canadian prairies.
That's right. And I know it has a lot of pea and lentil growers very concerned because these were their major crops. You know, they have a host of benefits. Like they have, agronomically, they can fix nitrogen from the air into the soil. So you can save money on, you know, your crop inputs for the following crop. But also economically, like these were some of their major money-making crops.
And it, you know, Canada has just recently started to invest quite heavily in building a whole plant protein-based sector that relies very heavily on pulse crops. So, what kind of damage can this inflict on a producer's on his whole operation?
I think it, you know, it depends on the year and depends on the field. Everything is kind of fluid, I guess. But if you have a major infestation, it can completely wipe out a crop to the point where there'll be major areas where you get zero yield back. But there's more often, though, it just takes a big bite out of the yield and out of the profit for farmers. And of course, it depends on the year. On dry years, you don't have as big of a problem. But on wet years, it can completely take over a field quite quickly.
Is it reaching the point where farmers are having second thoughts about taking the risk of growing some of these crops?
Absolutely. There are fields where farmers wouldn't dare to put in pea or lentil again just because of, you know, their previous experience growing these crops on that field. They just would have to move on to a different crop for at least a few years.
So why is it taking such a hold?
It's just such a resilient disease. It starts off as a ooze spore, which is a thick-walled resting spore that's extremely resilient. It can sit in the soil for years and years. But as soon as you get the right conditions, which is, you know, a really wet year with saturated soil, it can wake up. And when it does that, it can it goes to the next stage of its life cycle, which is the zoospores. And they call it the multiplier stage because one ooze spore can cause up to somewhere around 100 zoospores that can swim through the soil and find the roots of the pea or lentil. And when it does that, and if the conditions continue to favor the disease, it can be detrimental to the crop.
Robin, do we know why it's becoming a problem now?
I think it's just because we're starting to grow peas and lentils more than it has been grown in the past. My understanding is that the disease actually does exist in pea and lentil regions all around the world. And now that we're actually growing a lot more of the crops, it just was a matter of time until it started to become a problem here.
Now, it's a fungus. Do we not have fungicides? Is there any work to develop fungicides that would help control it?
There are some seed treatments, but the problem with the seed treatments is that they don't last long enough. Like if the infestation could occur after the seed treatment sort of has worn out, well, then you're kind of out of luck. And to date, there are no fungicides that can take aphanomyces out when there's a lot of pressure.
So once it's in the crop, I mean, you can't do anything once it's started to manifest itself in the crop then.
No, once you have it, I think once you see it in the crop, yeah, there definitely isn't a magic bullet where you can pull a sprayer out and sort of try to fight back. You sort of have to sit back and watch.
So what options does the industry have then for controlling this?
The Saskatchewan pulse growers are doing a lot of research to learn how we can live with the disease here in the prairies. I know they're doing some fertility studies to see what maybe different fertility programs might do to help sort of combat the disease. They're looking at ways to help keep the crop strong as possible for as long as possible so it has some ability to withstand the pressure from aphanomyces. They're also looking at weed studies. Like I know they claim the shepherd's purse, chickweed, and vetches can be host for aphanomyces. So even if you're not growing these crops, if you have these weeds, that can be a way that the disease can carry on and kind of wait for the next crop. But they're also doing a lot of research into looking for resistance for aphanomyces. But that my understanding is that it's still going to be a few years away for peas. But for lentils, it's going to be even longer than that because they're struggling to find any kind of resistance so that they can breed into the modern varieties.
So they're essentially looking at some of the wild relatives of these crops to see if there's any resistant genes, similar to what they've done with some of our cereal crops in building resistance into disease. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly, Laura. They're looking at some of the wild relatives to bring some of those resistance or tolerance genes into the modern lineups. They tend not to like to do that because when you bring these genes over or when you make these crosses, you don't just get what you want. You get a lot of other things that you have to breed out in the breeding programs, and that takes some time. Typically, they like to look at other varieties from around the world because it's easier to cross with them and there's less unwanted baggage, I guess, when you do those crosses.
So in the meantime, without any immediate solutions on the horizon, what do farmers do if they want to keep these crops in their rotation?
The Saskatchewan Pulse Growers just published a newsletter on how to help keep these crops in your rotation, even under aphanomyces pressure. And a big part of it is once you have the spores on your field, there's not a lot you can do. So you really want to try to keep that spore load down. And a big part of that is looking at your field history, looking how many times you've grown pea or lentil in the past, but also how much disease pressure you had in those fields. If you didn't have a lot of disease pressure, then, you know, you might get away with having a little bit of a shorter rotation. But if you had a lot of disease pressure, you're probably going to have to wait for, you know, some time. They also look at how much rainfall happened in your area when you grew either pea or lentil. Because if it was a very wet year, then there's a good chance that the disease had favorable conditions and there will be more spores in your field. So, yeah, looking at the field history, looking at the weather patterns, the last time you grew pea or lentil, that's a major piece of knowing when you can grow these crops again.
So it's really becoming a question in the interim here of whether to almost an annual assessment of to grow or not to grow.
Yeah, that's right. And there are some soil tests that you can do to find out how many oospores that you have per gram of soil. If you have 10 oospores or less per gram of soil, that's kind of a threshold where you can likely go ahead and plant. But if you have more, and there are some fields in Saskatchewan that had thousands, you probably shouldn't be planting pea or lentils for quite some time.
Well, thanks very much for coming today to talk about this story, Robin. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about it in the future.
Thanks, Laura.
That was Robin Booker, a reporter with The Western Producer. This is Between the Rows. I'm Laura Rantz. Last year at this time, commodity markets were in the doldrums, which didn't matter a whole lot because a significant portion of the 2019 crop was still in the field. What a difference a year makes. Last fall, farmers harvested one of the highest quality crops ever. Exports are moving at a smoking hot pace and prices, well, I turned to Phil Franz Workington of Markets Farm to bring us up to speed on that story. Hi, Phil. Thanks for joining us today on Between the Rows.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So there was a fairly significant report that we all refer to as the WASDE report that came out this week. First of all, what does WASDE stand for, just in case someone's not familiar with it?
Yeah, that's the USDA puts that out. That's the WASDE World Agriculture Supply and Demand Estimates. So every month they come out with their new take on export demand, domestic demand, and production around the world, and where the balance sheet is shaking out.
So, you know, this is the first of these reports coming out this year. Was it significant for any other reason?
They also included some numbers on, they had their, I guess it was a separate report really, but they all kind of come out at the same time in connection. So they had quarterly stocks as of this past December, and they had some numbers on wheat, winter wheat acres in the States. updates on South American crop production. So there's a whole slew of data all came out at once, and the resulting impact on the futures was when it came out on Tuesday that everything was up a lot. The numbers were bullish, to put it mildly. Corn posted limit up gains of 25 cents per bushel. They're up again the following day. Everything else was higher as well, and that spilled into our canola market too.
So what's the backstory to that? Why were the numbers so interesting to the markets, to put it mildly?
Yeah, well, the thing everyone was watching is the ending stocks projection. So how much will be left at the end of the crop year, particularly soybeans and corn. And both of them, the projections were dropped from the last estimate back in December. And in addition to those drops, the numbers were below expectations. So soybeans, they're predicting now 140 million bushels will be on hand at the end of this current crop year. That's down by about 35 million from an earlier guess. And the tightest carryout for beans in years, and well below the 525 million last year. Similar story on corn. Corn, there's more corn around just because there's more corn grown. But the stocks were pegged at about 1.5 billion bushels. That would be down by nearly, about 400 million from last year. And so the corn number is seen as especially bullish, because that's a rather tight number as far as corn's concerned. They also revised lower U.S. production from this past year, and adjusted some South American crop estimates lower. And so it all added together to kind of the sentiment was, we knew things would be tighter, but we didn't know they would be this tight. And now the markets are scrambling to ration demand and make sure there will be enough corn and beans at the end of the crop year.
So, of course, these markets, spill over to the prices that Canadian farmers would receive for things like their cereals and canola. But as I understand it, the canola stocks are pretty tight as well. So what's been happening in that market as a result of all of this?
Yeah, canola is in a similar situation with the numbers pointing to rather tight stocks by the end of this year. Prices have been going higher for months since the summer, I believe. It's just, you look at the chart and it's steadily up, and yesterday was no exception, or Tuesday, a bit of a larger jump there, but it just continuing the trend of prices have to go higher to slow some of this demand. But that the end, it's looking like it may have to go higher still, because the exports are running well ahead of last year's pace. The domestic crush is a bit slower on the year, but still solid overall. So if the current pace keeps up, even the already tight ending stocks projections won't be met. We'd end up with, if the numbers are there, are all true, we'd have negative supplies at the end of the year, which obviously can't happen. So the something has to give.
It's kind of a good news, bad news story for farmers, because obviously if you have canola, this is wonderful. These are better prices than anyone would have anticipated. But the reason prices are so high is that not a lot of people have canola. Yeah. So how does that balance out then on the farm? I mean, are there still stocks in place for people to take advantage of this?
The line companies are still bidding by all accounts, so they must want it. So if there's unpriced canola out there, prices could still go higher, but you know, they're pretty good right now as it is. You know, it's hard to pick a top on this kind of thing because eventually, you know, the house of cards will fall, but that would be more the case if this was all kind of chart technical speculative money, which there is speculative money has jumped in on this rally, but the fundamental story underneath is supportive. So there, that kind of underlying sense is gives it more legs than if it was just a kind of chart based technical rally.
Well, it's a nice way to start off 2021. Thanks for bringing us that story.
Thanks for having me.
That was Phil Franz-Workington, who writes for Markets Farm. We have one final item for you in this week's show. One of our producers was wondering aloud one day what rodeo athletes are doing this winter, especially when they didn't have any rodeos to go to last year, and it's not yet certain whether there will be any in 2021. So we asked. Here's what we learned from Stacy Rizika, a competitive barrel racer from Pinoca, Alberta.
Junior story of rodeo. Started her season in amateur rodeo. Went to a couple of pro rodeos. One of them said, hey, I can do this. Yeah, she can. She came in here third overall. Stacy Rizika on K to the far side.
There's nothing like the adrenaline of running down an alley. You know, before the race goes, the crowd, you know, the last girl comes out and the crowd is loud and it's your turn to go in and you hear your name. Your horse is revved up and they just bolt in the arena and there's nothing like it, you know. And come around the first barrel and you know you've got it. You go on second barrel and things are happening so fast you don't even remember sometimes what goes on. And the crowd is going wild and the announcer, you know, says new leader and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's the best feeling in the world. And that's mostly what I miss. It's in our blood and it's been hard sitting at home and not being able to go down the road and see all your friends and, you know, everyone's family, so it's a big part missing in your life when you're used to that for, you know, many years. I live west of Pinoca about a half an hour. It's a beautiful area. I have nice trees around. I just live on 6.7 acres and purchased it just over 2 years ago. I have a couple horses here. My main horse, Kay, that I rodeoed on and made the CFR with. And another horse, Maybe. She's a little fireball herself. Also, being here west of Pinoca has been a great area. Of course, you know, as everyone knows, it's pretty central for rodeo and kind of the hub of where everyone would want to be. So very fortunate to have found a place out here. How do I keep in shape over the winter? Well, I do little exercises myself at home. You know, keeping core. Core is huge at barrel racing. I mean, your horses are running Mach 10 and you've got to be there with them in their turns and such. And without having rodeo over the last, you know, year and a half here, it's been different because you feel like, what is the point? But I still do it because I know it's going to come back. My horse, Kay, she has been my whole world. I have had her since she was 3 years old. I trained her. She's going to be 17 this year. I can't believe it. And she has won and won and won over the last 10 years. And I just look back and think, wow, how blessed am I to have this creature, this animal, that has done nothing but give me everything I've ever wanted. And, you know, she's my best friend. She knows everything about my life. You know, I can tell when she knows I'm having a bad day, or she knows, you know, I know when she's having a bad day. We give each other our little space, and yeah, she's been everything to me. You get that once in a lifetime, you know, horse that has done so much for you, and you just, yeah, it's just, there's nothing greater than it. You know, she's like my kid. You know, COVID has changed everyone's lives. Thankfully, you know, I haven't had anything or anyone close that's had it. You know, it's scary, but I think we all, you know, everyone's been doing their part and trying to stay safe, but life, you know, life has to go on. It's changed a lot, you know, of course, for rodeo, because we didn't have rodeo. But with the world right now, we don't know what's going to happen, and it's scary. It's scary to think what is going to come out of everything, but hopefully that things will get back to normal and, you know, we can all live our lives and do what we all love. So we just have to keep positive and hope for the best.
She's number one in the average, and she wants to stay there. Yes, she is! What a Canadian finals it has been for that cowgirl, 14.467.
That was Stacy Razika from Ponoka, Alberta. That's all we have for you on this week's Between the Rows. But we'll be back again next week. I hope you'll join us. I'm Laura Rantz.
I've been farming my whole life, and the one thing you can always count on is change. And now there's a new generation of inoculants from Lalemann Plant Care. New engineered granules in Lalfix Spherical for pulses and soybeans that provide improved handling and accurate metering. New Rhizobium and Lalfix Pro Yield that deliver improved nitrogen fixation and iron uptake in soybeans. I've seen a lot of change, but this Lalemann company, well, this changes everything. Contact your Lalemann sales representative today.
Today's music tracks were Coming Back by Lobo Loco and Earth and Sun, Leading Me On by Derek Clegg, Acoustic Romance and Dusty by Crowender.